News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Here we go, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 807 on Mobile Mornings. Great start to the day, though the showers are around, but they're all, at this, I haven't looked at radar recently. Dr. Bill was saying they were all off of the coastline so far this morning anyway.
That was some strong stuff yesterday. I mean, nothing like we saw a week ago today, but
true.
Yeah, severe thunderstorms rolling through yesterday, knocked some trees down, knocked the power out. I know this morning we've had some lights that haven't been operating, mostly along 90. Earlier had a texter who said Rangeline and Halls Mill and 90 and Rangeline lights were out, and also at 90 and Nevius earlier. So hopefully they'll get that back up and running soon. And then in the meantime, also apparently people have been driving like crazy people this morning too. So
yeah, with lights out, and that's really scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
I think we had at least two different trees that came down and affected power. One was, you said it was near Cottage Hill Christian.
Yeah, the Cottage Hill Church has had a rough go.
Yeah.
So last week with all of the bad weather and the power flickering on and off, they ended up with a small fire that they were fortunately able to put out.
Yeah.
But, of course, anytime. And they have the daycare there, too.
Yeah.
Which I'm very well familiar with.
Right,
so
right.
That was a tough one. And then I guess yesterday, a tree into the power lines is what I heard from my very close sources.
So also that was one tree into the power line, but not the only one. So
mm-hmm.
The other one was
out over in Dawes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So be careful out there. Meanwhile, how excited are you about Taylor Swift's wedding next week at the Madison Square Garden? You excited, Dan? Did you get the invite?
Is that where it is?
Yeah, they're going to have it at MSG. And the Swifties... The Swiftie detectives, which if we put, so of course the Nancy Guthrie case is a tragedy. I mean, mm-hmm. And it seems like some really bad police work done throughout that course. But if you would have told Taylor Swift fans that she was somehow, you know, part of that story and put them on the case, they would have figured it out, because the Swifties
they're intent.
They're detectives.
Yeah.
And they're more like, if you say something bad about Taylor Swift, they are more warmongery than Lindsey Graham is with international affairs. So they figured out the Madison Square Garden, they're going to have the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce wedding next week. I just didn't know if you were excited about that or not.
Who is the... remind me on the text line, somebody got married at Madison Square Garden back... Well, you had the...
I was reading about that yesterday. Now I can't remember the name. It was a singer in the 70s,
and
I think.
Sly and the Family Stone.
That's what it was, Sly. Yeah.
Not Sly Stallone. Sly and the Family Stone.
I can't do a Sly Stallone, so there you go. But that'll be the big news next week, Taylor Swift getting married. And is she trying to take the shine away from America's 250th? That's what everyone's wondering right now. I don't know.
Okay. How did I miss that story? I knew the wedding was coming up at some point, but do you really want to get married at an arena?
I mean, I would have said, yeah, if you're going to let me get married at Madison Square Garden, heck yeah, I would have done it. But
yeah.
I'm not Taylor Swift or Travis Kelce or anywhere near that. And I wouldn't have known about this if I wasn't just prepping for the show today. But there you go. Taylor Swift getting married next week.
Here's what I'm saying. He's kind of a big star in the NFL, but really, she's a mega, mega, mega star internationally.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick one event where you can just do it in peace and quiet.
Yeah.
And instead you're going to have it with 20,000 people around you. I guess they're all buying tickets or what? I don't know.
I have no idea. You know, yesterday, those earthquakes. Holy.
Terrible.
And I was keeping up on social media, the Venezuela earthquakes. And so two powerful earthquakes hit Venezuela. Death toll is at the latest count, and this will most likely go up at 164, and so far around 1,000 people confirmed injured due to the quakes. Overnight, rescue teams were working to locate people.
1,000 injured?
So far, yeah. Oof. Which actually kind of seems low, considering that you know, the capital is where so much of this damage happened, right there at Caracas.
Yeah.
But Venezuela's interim presidency, Delcy Rodriguez, said gave those numbers out, nearly 1,000 people injured. and at least 10 buildings had collapsed in the capital, and many more in the worst-hit state of La Guaira. A major rescue operation underway involving support from the U.S., Mexico, the Dominican Republic, El Salvador, and get this, Qatar helping with the rescue operation. I would love to know how Qatar got in
how
the mix
got,
there.
How they got there so quickly or made the decision to be a part of it. That's
Maybe it's just through funding or something, or maybe they have, I don't know, teams that come out and help. No clue. But so you had a 7.2 magnitude quake that hit around 6 o'clock local time yesterday evening, quickly followed by a second 7.5 magnitude quake, and the epicenter for both was about 200 miles west of Caracas. Rodriguez early this morning said there are dozens of collapsed buildings, and at this moment we are carrying out very intensive rescue operations to save as many lives as God allows. We can say that the state of La Guaira is experiencing a genuine tragedy and has become a disaster zone. You also have the Simon Bolivar International Airport, which was on the top of the hour news, they were saying destroyed. It was certainly heavily damaged at the very least. And that's where one of the videos I saw was from inside the airport and people running through the terminal, I guess, trying to get out. And oh my goodness, a couple of the people that were trying to get out, it was this like younger woman basically dragging what must have been her mother or grandmother and trying to get her out.
Wow.
And her feet weren't working. Wow. The mind, I'm sure, was telling her to get out, but the feet weren't following. You can imagine if you've had dreams like where you're having a dream and maybe you're getting into a fight and your arms aren't working, or you feel like you're drowning and you just can't find the air, but it's happening while you're trying to escape an earthquake in an airport.
Unreal. I mean, that's like a well-produced movie scene, but it was real life. That just has, if you're just at the airport, you're just either about to get on a flight or you're welcoming somebody back, and this earthquake happens and you're thinking, I gotta go.
And you think about this with the role that the United States has played in Venezuela politics here this year.
I know, and that's something.
I think
now
we need to take we need to treat this like it is, Puerto Rico or something.
Right?
So Secretary of State Marco Rubio said he had spoken to Rodriguez to coordinate assistance, said the U.S. was rushing to deploy search and rescue teams to Venezuela, and that the Department of Defense would play a major logistical role in the disaster response. If you want to continue to have this movement in Venezuela, movement to back this new government and have them change their ways, you got to prove to the people of Venezuela that America will be there for them.
I guess you don't have to because we got all the cards, kind of, sort of, but it's going to help.
I think it would definitely help, if you're trying to continue to foment that resistance from within, if they know that the U.S. will be there for them.
This is an opportunity, right?
This is an opportunity, exactly. But, oh my goodness. And then you also had, Japan, off the coast of Japan, an earthquake that was a 7.2 magnitude earthquake off the northern coast. That was during rush hour yesterday, I guess it was like later yesterday for us, but earlier in the morning for Japan. They did say there was no danger of a tsunami and no serious injuries reported. And also yesterday morning, Northern California had a 5.6 magnitude earthquake, and that was in the northern part of the state, about 6.8 miles north of Redwood Valley.
Wow.
At about 8:16 West Coast time.
Four earthquakes in all yesterday, because Venezuela
at least
was two back-to-back.
Four big-time earthquakes.
Four big ones, And that's something. I don't remember a day like that.
No, and Chris, a question here, and I don't know the answer to this, Chris. He said, here's a question. Could all the new drilling in Venezuela be a contributing factor to the earthquake? Just a thought. I don't know. I'm not a tectonic plate genius. I know things like this happen from time to time. And
well, that's where I step in, because
and we call you Mr. Tectonic. That's right. But no clue. It is a little worrisome. And there were people posting some Bible verses from Revelation saying, look, this is what's coming to. But
every time, but that seems to be quite remarkable. Four earthquakes, three in very different locales, Japan, Northern California, Venezuela. That's where they had two of them. I don't remember a day like that. I don't remember earthquakes kind of ganging up on us that way.
No, me neither. No. Speaking of ganging up, yesterday, Trump and the GOP senators in that meeting, quite the go-round about the war in Iran, which is not what the meeting was necessarily meant to be about, but Trump putting a halt to the Road to Housing Act signing because he wants the Save America Act to pass through.
So I was thinking about this. Let's break it down. So we talked about the Save America Act yesterday. You said so many Americans were in favor of it and still it wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And because we were talking about the Housing Act, how that was obviously a favorite among constituents because it was so overwhelming, the vote in the House and the Senate. So just for kind of a refresher, this is Speaker Mike Johnson on what is in the Save America Act, okay?
And it has proof of citizenship to register to vote and the proof of showing a photo ID when you show up to vote. Basic issues that 90% of Americans agree, 70% of Democrats think you ought to have a photo ID to vote, and citizenship to vote in an American election is already in the law. But we have to enforce it because you've got a few blue states that don't do that. The president believes in election integrity. He talks about it all the time, and we do as well. And act indeed, we have stood for that. We passed the Save America Act again. Let me finish this. This is very important. That is the top priority, because if you do not have safe elections in this grand experiment in self-governance that we have in a constitutional republic, you don't have anything. And we got to ensure it. We have to press for election integrity measures. That's why we've made it a top priority.
So House Speaker Mike Johnson on now, what's the holdup?
It has been stuck in the Senate, and here's why. Because no Democrat in the House or Senate will vote for the Save America Act. Those two things I just told you, they vote against that every single time, and they will. Why? You ask that. That's a rhetorical question. You should go ask them the actual question. Why? Are you against proof of citizenship and a photo ID? Why is that? They can't give you a cogent answer. The reason is they do want to allow for cheating and fraud in the elections because it is the only way that the Marxists can win. They cannot win on their ideas. That's why this is so important to the president and is to us. So how does that tie into housing? He's laser focused on Save America Act, as most common sense Americans are. The only path, I think, to get that done, because you're never going to get seven Democrats to join 53 Republicans in the Senate to do that. They will not do it. Chuck Schumer will never vote for that or release any Democrat to do it. You have to put it on a reconciliation bill. We believe that if you create a grant program that ties it to reconciling the budget, and you allow blue states, if they come to their senses and they want to avail themselves of election integrity proposals and ideas and policies, they can draw down from a federal fund and use those funds. We're willing to invest heavily in that.
Have you heard any answer from a Senate Democrat that would lead you to believe otherwise than what we just heard?
No, not at all. And, you know, there are that Road to Housing Act. There are actually some Republicans that are against that. And Chip Roy, a congressman, he was one of the no votes. He laid out on his X page why there are some bad things in that housing bill, which I think is worth the time to go over at some point here. But
yeah,
as far as the,
there's a lot in it.
As far as the Save America Act. So when you listen to Thune and he says, there's just no way, you know, no way we can get this across. You need 60 votes in the filibuster proof vote to get it across. You're not going to get that because you're not going to get any Democrats on board.
Right.
Maybe Fetterman, maybe. But other than that, no. But to get the, then that leaves you with either the talking filibuster and another Trump detractor in the Republican Party now, John Cornyn. He posted the reasons that a talking filibuster, according to him, would be a bad idea. And that's because the Democrats would be able to drag it out, and because they would be able to force other votes on divisive and unpopular bills for Republicans,
right,
which he didn't want to see that happen. But to actually eliminate the filibuster, which you heard both Jared Hudson and Barrymore, who ended up winning that race for Republicans, the Republican part of the Senate race coming up in November, he wants to eliminate the filibuster. Tuberville has talked about eliminating the filibuster, but you need 51 votes to do so. And I know that's been a discussion that both sides have been having for what seems like an eternity. Well, they're going to do it. And the Democrats have talked openly about doing it in order to make Puerto Rico and D.C. states, and theoretically, they think get four more Democrat senators to shift the balance of power there. And they also want to load up the Supreme Court. So Republicans are saying, well, listen, the Democrats, as soon as they gain power, they're going to nuke the filibuster, so we need to go ahead and do it. But you need 51 Republican votes now, just a simple majority to nuke the filibuster, and they're not going to get that because you have your Susan Collins's, you have your Mitch McConnell, which he's in the hospital still and not voting this week, and no one really knows, you know, the exact reason he's in the hospital. You can guess his health hasn't looked great for a long time. And you have your Murkowskis and just the people who feel that on principle alone, they don't want to destroy the filibuster. But Trump and so many Republicans say you have to have the Save America Act. We're really just kind of stuck in neutral right now.
We really are.
As far as the Road to Housing Act, now, unless Trump vetoes it, it will go into law, I think, 10 days to 2 weeks after it was passed here a couple days ago.
Yeah, like 10 days, not including Sundays, something like that.
And Congress can hold the bill back from getting to his desk as well to kind of drag this out a little bit further. But really, really interesting times in D.C. right now. And at the very least, if they can't leverage the fact that Democrats won't vote for voter ID, which an overwhelming number of Americans want to see happen.
Like 70% of Democrat voters want that to happen.
At the very least, the Republicans have to find a way to weaponize that against them for the midterms.
But yeah.
Right now, it just seems like, you know, once again, we have a Republican majority in the Senate, a Republican majority in the House, a Republican in the White House, and they can't get anything done.
True. It is true. 823 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton. And your text, 251-343-0106, plus Rob Hulbert from Lanyap and our weekly visit with him on the way.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Once again, Iran is saying one thing, and others are saying other things. This time with the nuclear inspectors. Access to Iran's nuclear sites and materials struck by the United States will only be examined and resolved within the framework of a final deal. So Iran says nobody's coming over here until the deal is done. And then Rafael Grossi, who talks like this, he said, no, look on me. So he said that they would indeed conduct inspections. So it seems to be two messages of the same subject. So anyway, we'll see. The oil is flowing. It's you know, the Strait of Hormuz is open, and those numbers look a whole lot better.
How much life insurance coverage do you get if you're an IAEA inspector,
oh my
by the
God.
Way? Or can you get that coverage? B-Dark texting, with Republican majority and nothing getting done, it means all Republicans are not true Republicans. Oh, that's a fact, B-Dark. Mommy issues on the text line. If election integrity was a priority, Tommy Tuberville and the Alabama Republicans don't want the courts to show eligibility. Hypocrisy at its finest. Do as I say, not as I do. And in a red state at that. We'll get to the Tuberville stuff here when Rob Hulbert joins us here in the next segment.
He had that hearing canceled?
Today, yeah, because filing a motion to dismiss. So on the 29th will be the next court hearing on that lawsuit. And continued here, even with Republicans having a majority, they can't get all the Republicans on the same page. It seems like they would be short either way, just like this bipartisan bill on housing. Just disingenuous, fellas. Texter here says perhaps Congress, who the Republicans have control of, aren't passing the Save America Act so they can ask people like Thomas Massey. I'm sure it's used both ways. That's another thing that Chip Roy was posting about yesterday. He said, well, you know, a lot of the funding to keep this, you know, gravy train rolling with the voting goes to Democrats. They also have several Republicans that are getting some campaign finances from them too, and giving them reason to not vote for things like the Save Act. CB Carl says, good morning, guys. I just found out that today is National Catfish Day. Now I know what's for dinner. That sounds actually really good right now. Pat says 90. Okay, thank you. Yeah, 90 in Rangeline. We were talking about the lights out earlier there. As the same as 90 in Nevius. Thank you there, Pat.
I got another one for another idea for the text line. Best catfish plate in town or around.
It's got to be from a gas station, right?
No, it's not going to be from a gas station. There's so many places that make excellent catfish.
I bet some people will tell you it's from a gas station. Yeah.
Oh.
A meat and three, something like that.
I don't know that I would eat catfish from a gas station.
Oh, dude, there's some great food at gas stations.
Well, there is some great food, but I think I'd cut it off at seafood.
Okay. Summerdale Tony said he's been a Braves fan for many years. It's always the same thing. They start hot and end up a dud.
They're dudding it out right now. Rob Hulbert with Lanyap is on the way on Mobile Mornings.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton at FM Talk 106.5. A man who's never bought catfish at a gas station is Rob Hulbert.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I'm sure Rob has at some point.
Rob Hulbert with Lanyap.
I absolutely have bought catfish at a gas station. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing that right now.
It's National Catfish Day. I was telling Dan that, you know, a lot of gas stations do have some great catfish. I mean, I grew up in Grove Hill. We had Dunn's, Exxon, and I think they changed, you know, the gas company several times over the years. They had some great catfish. Sheila said the best catfish place is David's Catfish House.
That's what I'm talking about. Let's give love to the actual, you know, restaurants.
I ate at that quite a bit in Thomasville. And then Roy says Greer's St. Louis Street has the best fried catfish. So we're fighting it out about the catfish this morning on National Catfish Day.
Yes, we are. And now we're done.
Yep.
Rob Holbert with Lagniappe Mobile. What's going on, buddy?
Much, guys. Just getting ready for the weekend, hoping it's not going to pour on us again.
Yeah, it's been...
We had quite the gully washer last weekend, and as we reported this week, it also, as usual, that meant... A lot of sewage releases as well.
No kidding.
Yeah, but the city, I know Kyle Hamrick wrote a story this week, and at the city council pre-meeting this week, they were saying it could have been much worse after putting $6 million in for some stormwater upgrades and then doing a little pre-work by going out and, I guess, vacuuming a lot of the drainage areas that are known to pile up with water during these heavy storms, that they were able to at least save us maybe some overflowage. But, yeah, we're still talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of gallons that made its way into our creeks and other waterways.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the city was pretty happy with the flooding, with the drainage overall. I think they were happy with some of the things they had done. But, you know, we still have, and these are more the malls issues. Certainly we haven't even gotten any numbers in yet from Pritchard Water and Sewer Board, but also Baldwin County, just where you have sanitary sewer overflows, and more than a million gallons of sewage flowing into area waterways. It's just it's an issue we have all the time, especially this time of year when it rains really hard.
You live on an area waterway. What's it like down your way?
It smells bad. No, you don't notice it, of course, but. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, people just, I don't think nobody notices it per se, but it's just, you know, I think we get used to it. And I think that's the problem is it's sort of like, it happens. But you think about it when you decide, I think I want to go jump into Dog Creek, Dog River, or, you know, get out and swim. Then I really think about it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No doubt about that. Well, hopefully the city can kind of, you know, build off of this and we can snowball into really getting this in the best order we can so that we're not seeing it. You know, from minimal rain, we've seen this in the past. Some issues pop up.
Especially in Pritchard.
Right. Yeah, definitely in Pritchard. And, of course, their system, it's going to take a lot more work than even the old pipes here in Mobile.
They were denied getting a loan recently, earlier this week, for water systems around the state. It's like we cannot do business with them because they're just not
ready to pay it back.
Not competent in taking care of the money that we give them, and the loan's never coming back. It's been a long story.
The folks at Baykeeper estimated that they told us a couple of weeks ago they thought it would take $400 million to fix their water and sewer issues.
I saw that.
Good gracious. Well,
crazy number. Yeah.
It is a crazy number. Let's talk about some other crazy numbers and the cover story this week from Grant McLaughlin here's the headline, millions in election money flowed into local primaries. And this was certainly a story along the way. And even in that last week of the elections, we were talking with Rusty Glover about his campaign, and he was putting some numbers out there. But now that it's a little bit behind us, Grant has some hard numbers here and some facts. You got these out-of-state PACs that poured a lot of money into local races, but we're talking here about some gambling PACs and some upsets. I really think, four local races, and we saw two incumbents fall who were backed by these gambling PACs. And what I thought was fascinating about Grant's story, especially Harwell's comments, it sounded like they didn't want the help because it ended up hurting them more than helping them.
Yeah, I think, you know, Rusty Glover's race was one that was particularly egregious because I think, you know, Rusty, a lot of people know Rusty Glover, and I think he's, if people don't disagree with his politics to some extent, that's one thing, but the portrayal of him as this the individual they're portraying, I don't think is somebody anybody around here knows.
That's true.
That's not him. And I think and that's we talked to Doug Harwell as well, and Rusty is, you know, both of them in this thing. And the, I guess the American Conservative Fund or whatever it was, foundation was behind this, but it's just the amount of money pouring into state House races, state Senate races is just phenomenal. You know, you look at these races that 10 years ago probably wouldn't have generated more than a couple hundred thousand dollars are generating millions and millions of dollars, and you wonder why. You know, and it is gambling and anti-gambling groups. Yep. There's a lot of it. But, you know, Harwell said, hey, I didn't ask these guys to come in. They just started doing this. I think in his case, I think it really hurt him. I think it backfired on him. Not saying it backfired on him that he tried to do it, but I think it hurt him.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But Matt Simpson also faced some of the same kinds of things in his race. I think Greg Allbritton did. You know, there were people who we talked to all those guys. But when you look at the numbers, it's definitely a much bigger amount of money coming in from out of state to try to affect these, what we would almost consider a local race, and, you know, which wouldn't have been such a big deal all that long ago.
And it's bad politics, too. I mean, it's like if I try to write attack ads for some candidate in Seattle, I'm not going to, you know.
Right.
Know the intricacies beyond what I can glean from a couple Google searches. But so it didn't work as well for some of these candidates as I guess the PACs wanted. But like I said, I don't think, you know, maybe Harwell wanted the help. Maybe he didn't. I got the sense from Grant's story that he didn't really, he knew that it was hurting him. And he said, and this kind of works both ways, where you're not allowed to communicate with the PAC as a candidate. So when they do throw out that dirt, you can say, you know, that's not on me. That's them. And you can utilize it. But he was saying, I couldn't even get him to stop because I can't communicate with him.
Yeah. I mean, but you look at races like Allbritton, you look at races like Matt Simpson, where incumbents lost and the relative newcomers as well. And there was just a lot of advertising against them. And it may have been pretty effective, you know, in their races, I think. When you look at those ads, too, they all sort of seem the same. They find the worst-looking picture of the person they can find and make them look evil and you know, just distorted. It is it's a mess. I think it's a good opportunity, hopefully, for people in the legislature to look at, you know, how campaign financing and reporting is done in this state.
Mm-hmm.
If they took some limits off before, and how are PACs behaving in the state? There could be some restrictions put in place, I think, that would be helpful. And, you know, do you really want to invite PACs come in and dump $3 and $4 million into a House race? It just distorts everything.
Mm-hmm. Simpson is quoted, Matt's quoted in your story saying it's ridiculous for a state House race to have this kind of money being spent. I couldn't get my message out because every time somebody went to the mailbox, there were two mailers for me, two mailers against me, Simpson said. And he's currently planning, according to your story, he's planning to file a lawsuit against AVP over various claims made in the mailers, too. So he's going after him a little bit, huh?
Yeah, no, I hope he does. I think, you know, I think Matt did a good job as a representative, and I was pretty shocked to see him lose. And I think that was a big part of it. Mm-hmm. It is, but I mean, you think about it. I mean, when you go to your mailbox during all this time, it was that. I mean, you picked it up and there's, you know, 10 mailers about different people, and you're just like, what is this mess, man? It's crazy how much money was being spent, how much money was dropped in this race.
Yeah,
dark money, just from out of state and just for their own means.
It is dark money.
Yeah,
and they're not really reporting it. The reporting issues are problematic. You know, we don't really know who's spending what. It really allows people to, you know, PACs, as always, you know, the reason people put money in PACs is because they don't want you to see who's doing it.
Yeah.
So they, in and of themselves, that's what they're for. I mean, that is by and large what they're for. So, you know, they already start out from the standpoint of trying to be secretive.
Right. Yeah.
And that's an issue.
And, you know, Albritton losing, too, that was kind of a shock as well. And he was kind
of a big shocker to me.
Yeah, that was a massive shock.
We were sitting here watching it in real time on our election show going, whoa.
Yeah. So we knew that there was big outside of the state gambling money coming in. Did you say there was anti-gambling money, too? I mean, we've seen that when it's come up in the legislature before, too.
Yeah.
Was it kind of apples to apples? Were they spending just as much or the anti-gambling money?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think that they were spending as much, but it's hard to tell at this point. Again, you know, all those numbers are not in, and I don't know when they will be reported, if they will be reported, or how they're going to be reported.
Jeez.
It's just, it's difficult, and I think the state needs to have more, they need to have stronger rules about what is reported and how it's reported.
Well, yeah, that seems to be obvious, like looking back at these elections, it's... The conversation's going to have to be had.
It will. But in the meantime, I just placed a bet on a prediction market that the Alabama legislature isn't going to do anything about this, so, which is legal right now to use the prediction markets.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about another upcoming election, too. And I know there was supposed to be a court hearing today regarding that lawsuit filed threatening or saying that Tuberville doesn't have residency in the state to run for governor.
Right.
And that hearing has been postponed because Tuberville and the Secretary of State, Wes Allen, are filing a motion to dismiss. So now it sounds like the 29th, which is four days away. That'll be the next hearing. What's the latest on the Tuberville story? I know Scott wrote because Tuberville promised as he was running for Senate that he would donate his full Senate salary to veterans groups. And Scott, I guess using the tax returns, looked into this and found that the numbers weren't lining up.
Well, I think that's the thing that, you know, one of the things that came from them sending out their tax returns, his tax returns improperly redacted, that you could see the numbers, and you can see that it doesn't appear that he's sending his Senate salary anywhere. I mean, that he's giving it away, and as he promised. And Scott talked to the guy who runs his foundation, and that guy, he's basically admitted, he's not giving his money to, we haven't seen it. He promised me that, but he isn't doing it. He basically said he hasn't talked to him in a couple of years. So, you know, it's some of those promises. I mean, they were very strident promises as well. You know, if you read some of the things he said in the story when he was running for Senate, you know, it's, I'm going to bring a check every week and give it to somebody. And you know, it's, you know, it gets back into, you know, you make promises, do you live up to them? You know, I think what's going to happen with this court case, we'll find out if it's going to, and of course, they're going to try to have it tossed out ahead of time. Will that happen? I don't know. You know, that's to be determined. If the case happens and there is discovery allowed, that may not be great for him. And I think in the news, it's going to be in the news constantly, regardless. If it's going on and there's going to be discovery and what things come out, I think, of course, they're going to be trying very hard to get his federal tax returns to see if they match up with what his returns from Alabama said. And, you know, if they don't, that could be some serious problems for him.
Alabama being such a red Republican state, if he's actually found to qualify to run for governor and is in the election that day, there's no way he doesn't win, right?
I mean, I think he wins. Very likely he wins. No way. I don't know. You know,
okay.
I mean, it's not. I wouldn't. You know, argue those things. I mean, you know, it's Roy Moore lost to Doug Jones years ago. It depends. I mean, it depends on all these things. You know, what are people willing to take? I mean, I think when you look at the massive amount of evidence regarding where he's lived and does live and has lived, it's hard to really say that he's been a real Auburn resident. I don't think he has. I mean, it's very difficult to say. He hasn't proven anything, in my opinion. If his taxes are sort of rigged in some way, I don't know that they are, but they look really weird. I mean, to say that he earned $11,000 in 2019 is kind of strange. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff there that, that may come out. Mm. It may change people's minds. I don't know. That's not my dog, man. I don't care. Well, those are the things that people need to decide for themselves.
In the meantime, has Doug Jones provided you guys any of the tax returns or anything of that nature that he promised as well?
He has not. Yeah. No, he has not. And we've asked for them repeatedly, and we've written a couple of stories about it. He's the one that brought it up. He said he wanted to do it. He would do it if Tuberville did it. We've asked for him a couple of times. He still hasn't done it. So, you know, we're going to continue to ask for them. And, you know, it'll continue to be an issue, I think.
Are you dry pressing your tux for the nappies coming up here less than a month? Dry cleaning?
It's a Western theme. It's a Western theme, so I'm dry. Having my chats dry cleaned. So, yeah, it's gonna be nice.
Well, you can still wear a tux. You just have to put the bolo tie on, and then you're right. All of a sudden Western.
That's
right?
True.
We're good to go. Well, we're looking forward.
Maybe a suede tux. Yes.
We're looking forward to that, and can't wait to see what horse you ride in on for the nappies, Rob. So, that to if folks want to sign up for Lagniappe Mobile online, how can they do that?
You can go to lagniappemobile.com and get signed up. It's just $1 for the first month, 30 cents a day after that. Well worth it. We're putting news out all day long.
All right, Rob. Thanks for the update. Thanks for the chit-chat. And we will talk again in 1 week.
All right, fellas. Y'all have a great weekend.
Rob Holbert, lagniappemobile.com. And we'll come back and wrap up this morning's Mobile Mornings. Coming up, the Jeff Poor Show. We'll let you know who's coming up there. And a whole lot more right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
8:56, Jeff Poor on the way.
Yeah, coming up on the Jeff Poor Show, he'll talk with political consultant John Gray in hour number one. Just after 10:30, April Marie Fogel will join the Jeff Poor Show. And then in hour number three, Bradley J. with Breitbart News to talk about what has been an insane week in Washington, D.C., especially after that go-around yesterday with Trump meeting with the GOP Senate for lunch.
Yeah, that was a pleasant hour. Tim on the text line says, on the Pritchard water, they have not made the necessary repairs for years. If Moss takes over the system, it's definitely going to affect their customers' bills. I would think so, too. I would guess, you know. It said they would have to have a rate increase.
And it certainly doesn't sound like Moss wants any part of that.
Doesn't sound like they were rushing to the scene.
But I wonder if there is it possible that there will be some, you know,
coerced
direction from on high that say, no, Moss, you have to take it over.
Yeah.
I hope not. Steve said, when I heard that the pro-gambling PAC was supporting Simpson, it swayed my vote. I also met Duggar in person and liked her policies. And Simpson, you know, he did, I thought, some fantastic stuff in the state legislature. Mm-hmm. And no hate on Duggar. She won that race, and we'll see how good – I'm sorry. was it Duggar that was
on the Duggar?
Yeah, okay, yeah. We'll see how she – I'm sure she'll be good. She'll be great. But Simpson did some really good stuff, especially with a lot of the criminal prosecution stuff.
What he is, he's a DA, a lawyer, and he did some things that not only were good, that they were highly publicized.
But he had, according to the Lagniappe article, both pro- and anti-gambling PACs going after him. So, you know, where does that leave you? That's insane. Absolutely crazy.
But he talks about can't win, and then he didn't win.
He says he'll file a lawsuit in the article. Mommy Issue says, if they toss this Tuberville case, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt Alabama has zero integrity left. There are way too many questions, from his lying about money to veterans to his living in Alabama. Now, the residency thing, I really, you know, I know it's a big story. To me, the voters choosing him and the fact that he was the Auburn coach for so long and has been a senator for 7 years, that's less of a thing for me. But the veterans thing has me, you know, if he said he was going to donate a salary and then he didn't donate it, I hope he can give us some answers on that.
Yeah, my mind's really changed on how big that could possibly be.